What makes psychological change, often accompanying the distinct changes in boys' and men's bodies, so electric, amplified, and potentially disturbing? This is a question today's guest asks and answers, and we will meet him in just a moment. My name is Pamela Brewer, and I welcome you to this edition of Mind Talk. Dr. Robert Tominski is the author of Male Alienation at the Crosswords of Identity, Culture, and Cyberspace. Dr. Tominski is a psychologist and a Jungian analyst in San Francisco, California. Dr. Tominski, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thank you so much, Pamela, for inviting me. I'm happy to be talking with you.
Now, Dr. Tominski, you heard me describe you as a psychologist and a Jungian analyst. What's a Jungian analyst?
Well, that's the $64,000 question, but a Jungian analyst is a kind of psychoanalyst who follows the work of Carl Jung and then the people who Jung died in 1961, but the people who then have carried on his tradition of depth psychology. So looking a lot at symbols, imagery, and dreams.
And you heard me describe you as the author of, and I'm going to share that title again, Male Alienation at the Crossroads of Identity, Culture, and Cyberspace. That sounds like more than a mouthful.
It is. Yeah. Titles are tricky, and I think at one point I had wanted to just call the book Male Alienation, and the publisher and the editor I was working with encouraged me to expand on it a little bit. And so, I try and talk about like some of the contemporary issues that are really tricky nowadays in clinical practice, but also in like just our popular culture, our general culture. And so those really have things to do with internet use, social media, the role of culture and ethnicity, and then also something about like how we all define ourselves in this kind of time of like digital media and this kind of massive influx of information that we're living in.
Well, we're used to hearing about the ways in which women, females, feel alienated and the challenges that women and certainly children face online in this cyberspace universe in which we live. Why are we talking about male alienation? Is that a real thing?
I think it is. I mean, in my practice, and right now I've been in practice for over 30 years, and I do a lot of teaching. I lecture, and I hear a lot of cases, and so I hear these are mostly clinical cases that I'm talking about. So they're people who are seeking treatment for help, which is a subset of the general population. But usually, I've been struck by hearing something about, especially in my own practice, these words, I'm broken. And I've really tried to understand, and I encourage, it's usually a young man or a boy in late adolescence who says something like that. And I usually encourage them to try and look and tell me what they're seeing when they say that. And I think I'm broken, as I've come to understand it, is a bit of a shorthand in a way for I'm alienated. I don't fit in. I haven't found a place where I feel like I can connect. But moreover, I really am frightened about what goes on inside me. And so it's this double kind of alienation. It's the social piece outside and how you connect with people, but also like how we look inside ourselves and connect with ourselves and what brings us meaning and what lives in our minds and our both our conscious minds and our unconscious minds.
We're used to, again, I'm going to make the distinction between male and female. We're used to women Sort of looking inside of themselves, not all women, but many, looking inside of themselves and trying to understand sort of what's going on and how they're feeling just about themselves. But the idea that boys and young men would be doing the same thing, that for some people listening, I'm going to suggest, is really kind of a head turner because we're just not used to hearing about that, which I think certainly is a huge problem in terms of boys and men feeling disregarded. I think in a lot of ways they are disregarded. What's your thought?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're kind of like addressing there, in a nice way, something about like the data and the research that shows like at least in epidemiology for psychological, kind of diagnoses, women and girls tend to internalize, so they report, things like depression much more, and boys and men tend to externalize, so they tend to act out. So when they are depressed, they often are irritable and do things to get people to pay attention to them. They're not often not kind of, I mean, again, I'm sort of generalizing a bit here, but they're not kind of necessarily sulking in their rooms. They might go out and, paint graffiti on a building they're not supposed to, or they might, do something even more dramatic. I mean, there's a lot of, kind of boys and young men are in trouble, sort of alarm bells going off. So you look at things like the suicide rates, you look at things like substance abuse rates, you look at things like, just even the diagnoses that people show up with, and it shows that, there's much more of a slant in the male direction for the kind of serious things that happen that can in many cases be lethal. So for example, like motor vehicle accidents, motorcycle accidents, bicycle accidents, those are overwhelmingly male drivers. And so it, were there fatalities, I should say. And so it's, something about like that when boys and men need attention, they're so uncomfortable looking inside that often they just appeal. It's like a kind of cry for help or appeal to the environment.
And of course, when they go about it in that way, very often the results is not what they perhaps had hoped for. But if you're in car accidents, if you're a murder victim and you report some statistics that were shared in an article in The Economist, 79% of murder victims are male, 66% of suicides worldwide are
Right.
male. So it really sounds like our young boys and our men are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. I use the in this book, I use the metaphor of a house, and I try and use that. So it's a little corny in a way, I know, but I think there is something useful to it. And the idea of like that our you can think of what goes on inside us and kind of our minds is like a house. And so, there are different parts to the house, including, something that's usually down below, which we could think of as the unconscious, and then the main door, the front door you walk in. Well, I use that house metaphor because a lot of guys will talk about like that they don't want anyone in their house. And so you could have it on to the extreme of that the house is sealed up, almost like a mausoleum. And that's really a maladaptive way to think about like how, and I'm not trying to use maladaptive, I should say, in a critical or judgmental way, but you just think about the cost of that, of closing off access to your what goes on inside you. Like that's going to have all kinds of effects on your ability to learn, to relate to people. To be in intimate relationships. And of course, then, there are other kinds of houses too, where maybe it just needs to be remodeled, or maybe there's a house where the person feels like they've lost the keys, so they can't open certain rooms. So I really like the house metaphor because I
Yes.
think it says something again about like access and about exploration and about a construct, a spatial construct of what we carry around inside us.
Dr. Tominski, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we will continue. Folks, my name is Pamela Brewer, and I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Tominski, who is the author of Male Alienation at the Crossroads of Identity, Culture, and Cyberspace. We'll be right back. Dr. Tominski, you refer to the internet as a dark blob. What's that about, and how does that relate to your concern about boys and men?
Yeah, so that actually kind of comes from a patient of mine who had a dream. This was a man that I saw for several years, and so he was a bit, in the book I say he's in his 30s, and so he wasn't a boy or a particularly young man, but he had an issue with internet pornography, and so it was just interesting hearing this dream about, for him and the dream, like he felt like a dark blob was coming and attacking his house. So it does nicely pick up on what we were just talking about with the house metaphor. And, when I asked him to elaborate a little bit more, he did kind of make the connection that he thought it had something to do with his addiction to the internet and pornography on the internet. And you can think about, like, a screen, nowadays, I guess you can keep them active all the time, but when they're blank, right, when we turn them off, it's just this black surface. And so I think there's something about, the way we interact with these on our devices with these screens that we can easily get fooled, I think, into giving it a life and a kind of liveliness that that I would say by and large it doesn't have. And so I think that happens much more through, real-time connections that people form with one another. So in, my patient's idea of the dark blob, I think you could just see, like, that it's a way to lose yourself, and then how do you get back out of that? So I kind of use that, I think, as a metaphor to talk about some of the risks of the internet. And you can see this with video gaming that I've also treated, usually adolescent boys, but who have like a video game addiction. And would be online, playing their game, excuse me, upwards of 40 hours a week.
Oh, my.
And you can imagine what that does to being able to stay awake at school, to, how they interact with their family. And so you can sort of see, like there is something, a blob is kind of unformed, right? And there is something about these screens that invites us in, but if we're not conscious and aware and kind of always attentive to what we want from it, it can become a bit formless and really suck us in ways that are very risky. I mean, I think you there's a lot of talk about this now with the way it affected the election and things of that sort, but that's maybe going a bit afield. But
let me ask you this. You indicated that you'd been in practice for a number of years. Is there something that is going on today that is particularly different in terms of the alienation of boys and men, or is it just sort of more of life as usual and we're just paying attention to it now in a different way?
Yeah, that's a really great question, because in my book, a lot of the examples are clinical. I mean, there are a few that I take from popular media because so those, some of those cases go back, 20 plus years, But what I think is a little bit different in the, I would say, since 2007, 2008, is that's about the period where social media really exploded.
I see.
And so there is a little bit, like a kind of, like I had some parents tell me this week that kids don't text anymore, that they use Snapchat and Instagram as a way to communicate. And so you could see like just something evolving, like, it used to be that we would email and then it got to texting, and now it's that we use these social media sites to send one another messages. But then of course there's all the things that happen on social media that, can be a little bit treacherous. I mean, I think there's an example that I talk about with a guy who, his girlfriend stole his access, his password, and his username for Facebook, and then posted all these kind of really lewd messages about his supposed thoughts about other, she wanted revenge on him for supposedly being unfaithful. And she posted all these messages under his name and under his account. And so a lot of people at his school saw this. And he didn't kind of catch on for several days. And by the time he had caught on, it was a little too late. So he started to be shunned, and people started to, like, retaliate online. And he didn't quite, when he figured out what had happened, he was like, he just kind of couldn't believe it. And so again, like, it feels a little bit like we're in new territory with a lot of this stuff.
Are there behaviors that friends or teachers or parents should be at least mindful of as we're looking at the boys and young men around us today? Are there any sort of telltale signs, I guess, is what I'm asking, that there's a problem, that this person needs help?
Isolation. I
Okay.
mean, that's like, woo, like the flag is waving. I read a lot about, several of these, really horrendous mass shootings that have happened, and these tend to be young men in their 20s. And it's really interesting and sad to read, like, that, like, a lot of times they'll interview a teacher, and the teacher will say, "Yeah, he was the odd one. He was always on the outside." And you think about, like, well, that was in high school. I mean, like, why didn't somebody, like, again, kind of try to do something? And often things have been tried and attempted with these guys, but they're so adept at slipping away, and then for a period of time not going noticed. And so I think, like, aside from that, that's a very dramatic kind of example. But, like, if you're a parent or somebody in your family starts to, seem a bit more withdrawn, and there's something about, like, them not wanting to go out, or when they do go out, it's alone. That's really an indicator of something's going on, something's up.
So you really don't want to tell yourself that this is just a phase and they'll grow out of it. You really want to pay attention to what underscores the behavior.
Yes, I think so. If to go back to the house metaphor, it would be as if when that's happening, the boy or the young man is suddenly closing the windows, locking the front door, pulling down the shades. It's the kind of no trespassing sign goes up. That there's something about that really you wouldn't think of as being just a phase. It could be that, right? It's possible that, it could just be a reaction to a breakup or something like that, or to, not having achieved something that the guy was hoping to get. And if it's transitional, what you would hope for is to see those shades, come up, the windows open, the front door be on. So in other words, it's something about if this starts to feel a little bit more entrenched, that's really a warning sign, I think.
One of the things that struck me about male alienation, as we're talking about the book in its entirety, is that while I think it's certainly a valuable resource for clinicians, it's also a valuable resource for the layperson who really may not have a sense of the kinds of things that boys and young men may go through, or may have the myths in your head. I take particular note of the reference you made to Anthony, the 21-year-old who had been cutting himself since the age of 12. And even with that, when we typically think about children who cut or adults who cut, we think about women, we think about girls. But all throughout the book, you give us examples of things that happen to boys and men that we may not necessarily be aware of or even attached to them.
I think again it's like that ability to isolate and fly under the radar that is really potentially concerning, and that also is one of the things with these screens, is that you can fritter away hours on these devices, and it's easy enough for a parent or a friend or somebody in the close proximity to the person doing that to think, they're just playing video games, or they're just spending a lot of time online, without necessarily connecting the dots. And so I think one of the things about the isolation that I try and talk about is what gets generated in the isolation. And so with that case you mentioned, Anthony, in the book, he really started to construct a very, very troublesome image of himself. He thought of himself as being like a gargoyle. And so he had this kind of monstrous construct that he really was elaborating on while he was spending all this time alone. And so it's not as if the isolation is just, harmless, because something is happening. And the question is what? And so you think about, if you start to think about yourself as a monster, well, what does that mean? Are you kind of attributing monstrous powers to yourself too? Do you want to do something monstrous? Do you want to inflict the pain that a monster could inflict? And so those are all, again, things that happen as the isolation is occurring. And the other piece I would add quickly to that is you think about the emotions that get kindled in that isolation. And that's, I try and talk about these different emotions, and there's mania, that's a very risky one, kind of inflated sense of self. There's rage, and often the rage is a reaction to earlier experiences of shame. There's contempt, there's greed, and there's despair. And when those things are going on over a longer period of time, any of us could be at risk.
Absolutely. Dr. Tominski, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, I've got one more question for you as we begin to close out our conversation today. So, folks, don't go away. We'll be right back. You're listening to Mind Talk. Dr. Tominski, what is your sense of the challenges, the difference in the challenges, if any, when the young boy or the man is perceived as different, whether it's his race, whether it's his immigration status, whether he's seen as gay or not gay? Are any of those boys and men at more risk, do you think, nowadays or no?
Yes, I think it has a lot to do with their immediate community, and
Okay.
that would include their immediate family. But the risk would be marginalization. And the other thing that I would say, so like that's a social process, right, where a person is somehow like excluded, and these all we know happen in incredibly subtle ways, so that. That it's not, just not that you're not getting invited to something. It's that, maybe people don't look at you quite the same, or maybe it's that, you start to notice that you're kind of at the end of the line and how things happen. And so those things start to build up. That's the more subtle piece of marginalization. So I think, that's definitely a piece of it. The other thing I would say quickly about what you're asking is, for a lot of guys, like difference can, especially when they're trying to look inside and figure it out, difference can sometimes be associated with the feminine. And that can create almost a terror and a lot of boys and young men. So for example, differences related to sexuality, that might have something to do with like, gee, is there something about me that's effeminate, something about me that, inside is very feminine in a way that, doesn't fit concepts of masculinity that the person may have been exposed to. And so it's interesting to think about what you're asking about differences because, I think it can blur in ways that we just often wouldn't expect, that is there some pathway in which a person might think or a guy might think, yeah, I'm feeling kind of different. And is there something about that that also has to do with how I think about my gender or how other people perceive my gender?
So it, as much as we are spending time and not enough resources on considering girls and women, we also need to do the same for boys and men.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's a kind of a chronic issue with sort of mental health in this
Indeed.
country, and so building prisons is not really a entirely socially rational good use of our resources.
Couldn't agree with you more. Dr. Dominski, how do folks find out more about the work that you're doing, and the writing that you're doing?
Yeah, so they can go to the publisher's website. The publisher is Routledge, Routledge, .com, and that would just type in my name, and that'll show the book. And there's also I did a the publisher actually asked me to do a YouTube video. to I guess this is again the, for me this was entirely new, but I think this is the new horizon here. So after a first failed attempt because it was way too long, I did a shorter video,
I
and I
saw
think if they just oh good, okay. So you can critique it, but maybe not right this second,
I
okay?
understand. All right. So there are ways to get more information about Dr. Robert Tominski. That's TYMINSKI. And he's written other material, but certainly today we're focusing on male alienation at the crossroads of identity, culture, and cyberspace. Thank you so much, Dr. Tominski.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you may choose to do with a medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is produced by Jim Brown and 26 by 2 Communications. You can listen to Mind Talk on demand by going to Mind Talk, MYNDTALK.org. You should also check out the various social platforms that you listen to, because it's probably there as well. And I'd love to hear from you. Any questions or comments you may have about today's program or any of the programs? The email address is Pamela, PAMELA, at mindtalk.org, MYNDTALK.org. And folks, remember always, if it's unacceptable, then it's unacceptable. You take care.